Thank you for the pause.
Well, Mr. Green about had a breakdown. I said it's garbage. It's old, it's garbage. And about that time, within a day, came the first section of this book, and it was garbage. And Mr. Green about had a hemorrhage. Far more reaction to this than would ever meet the eye. Now, I have a reason for telling you this. Because in the statement that says you paid, now it says here you paid $75,000 to this John Coleman for three books. What about this? I mean, this man just lines them right up, see. And he does eventually get a response, which we will share with you in a minute, that says, well, it was not $75,000. He ends up at the end of every paragraph saying it's none of your business. But it was a large sum and other things, and he names, you know, two or three things, and computers, etc. Those computers belong to the Institute and to the Liberator. They were not Mr. Green's to give. And the reason that I'm bringing this up now is we also have a new letter from Mr. Green. As of yesterday, he finally, for the first time in all of this confrontation, wrote to EJ. Now we're going to settle when the truth is coming forth. We'll see. So hold this. We'll have to get back to this. We have to get back to this. There are too many of you sitting in this room and we're going to talk again about corporations. Can EJ and Doris, when she writes hours every day, really mismanage much of anything? But even Mr. Green wants to come back, and he says, I have put in $500,000, and the Eckers haven't put in a cent. Really? They haven't put in anything, he says. 74 journals. How many years of papers? Gold? His? That was sent directly to the Institute, and the only reason he ever had it in the first place was because there was no other way to get it here. Do you really think that Mr. Overton sent it to George Green to build a house with? Or to go to Neiman Marcus? Or to buy a Lincoln Town Car? The rest of you were lucky to eat at Brewer's, weren't you? It took Dharma, really, until yesterday. You know, once would say, well, aren't you just a bit irritated yet? Well, I don't know. I don't think he would intentionally do something like this. Oh, not George. I mean, we've worked here. No. And every time he hits him again, you know, the judge is saying, right to a bunch of you in here, basically, I'm going to put her in jail. This is his little grandmother. She didn't sell any books. George Green has shown and proven his intent to sell them, and then, by golly, turned right around and proved that he sold them. And now he's going to lay it off onto Desiree. That's honor? Well, I guess if you don't like your wife, seems a little unfair to me. But it finally got to Dormer. that he would do that to Desiree. So she's not as, and she felt a little better. And Kathy had her baby conveniently rather than in the middle of the night. Let me tell you before we go farther how precious the child is. I didn't have time to write it this morning, and I have broken down names as our little ones have come here. And it isn't that any of you, I wouldn't take the time to do this if we had the time, but I did this with Baleen, and I did it with Jenny. And I want to tell you, because I didn't get a chance to write it yet, what Tyler David means. David needs no explanation. That is beloved of God. Tyler is a little different. Tyler, in its pronunciation, is not really what you call Tyler. And they've chosen to call this little child Tyler David. Tyler is a cross between Theophilus, which means beloved servant to God, and Theodore, and another two or three derivatives of that word, meaning servant to the people. So he will serve God and his brothers, and he is beloved of God. And please, someone make sure Kathy knows that. Because all of you come up and choose your names. And it's interesting, isn't it, how it works out and I always get my way. Go on, EJ. I'll interrupt again, I promise.
For this edition of the paper, I have to leave much of it to the editors and layout person's discretion for content, for we have meetings all afternoon today and again tomorrow. This leaves a burden on the final copy handlers, and no, I do not dismiss anyone from the meetings, especially tomorrow, when we begin the discourses on corporations. It is the most important subject with which you can become informed. If the paper cannot be gotten out and attend the meetings, the paper will wait. If you need more editors to assist, please call on them for proofing. You do not need to rewrite or rearrange any of our writings if time is of essence. Nora's is very sufficient unto itself. And remember, you editors do not know my own purposes in presenting information. If there are questions regarding material, let the public inquire, and this allows discourse and communication, which ultimately brings a flood of fill-out information. This is exactly what we are about, attention and sharing of input. It is not too important that we have personal comment from one series. It is most important that we further valid information. Believe me, readers, this is the first material scanned by the administration, the CIA, the intelligence groups are in general, and our patriotic friends. Even if you don't know,
confound it, they don't even pay for it. They filch them.
Counter charges and steel nerves. I'm going to overload you again. I know the legal eagles are busy, 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 but they have to get help or get busier. We must use every bit of ammunition while it is hot, and excuses won't cut it any longer. Our attorneys must learn about Nevada corporations and learn properly and thoroughly, or they cannot practice law for any of our people. We are setting it up so we have no people. Excuse me. So, I want all available clippings regarding the Luke Perry interviews that have come to attention, and later we shall subpoena the TV tape. Perry makes accusations against ones Doris and E.J. Ecker, claiming that they built his family and hundreds of others of their assets. He claims his stepmother invested with the Eckers and has lost thousands of dollars. Mrs. Perry has not invested a cent or any other kind of or amount of anything with the Eckers. These public accusations are tremendously damaging, and for a paper to have such poor journalistic behavior as to print such garbage seems to me to be worth somewhere between 10 and, say, 20 million. You can't fight this system with guns, for goodness sakes. Use the tools you get. This is the best advertising for the security of incorporation that you will ever find. Don't let it slip through and be lost. File charges immediately yesterday. Perry is now trying to change the laws of Nevada because he is befuddled and totally helpless against good business. He wants his stepmother's estate, which is in her discretion as trustee. Dad made a very good value judgment when he set it forth this way, against his beloved and lovely children. Aren't we glad God showed us a way to protect her meager living necessities? God works in most interesting and mysterious ways his wonders to perform. We have another story along that line that we should tell sometime.
How about right now? They're all ears.
I'll make it as brief as I can. I had a telephone from a lovely lady just last evening. She had invested $100,000 in the Institute, and she had some other annuities and assets. Financial advisor learned of this, he immediately informed her accountant, and the accountant and the advisor got their heads together and wrote letters to the securities departments of Arizona and Nevada. And probably the FBI, well, I'm sure of the FBI, but probably the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission. It turns out that the financial advisor had assisted her in setting up a trust into which these assets were to be deposited.
Beware trust. Be very, very careful.
The trust was supposed to be under the control of the daughter, who is a paralegal in Texas, and the financial advisor and accountant also contacted the daughter immediately, and they were trying to recover this $100,000 that had been wasted by their mother. Now, I'll shorten this up quite a bit. Last evening when she called, I'm sorry, it was the evening before, she said, "Well, E.J., it looks like that $100,000 is all I've got. My daughter, paralegal, has managed behind my back to arrange through these trust agreements to tie up my annuities and all of my other assets and income. And may I please now change from no interest to the 10% interest that the Institute can pay." So that's just a kind of a nice little side story, I think.
And don't forget the agent.
Oh, yes. This got things stirred up with the management of his company, and they let him go. There were other signs and signals of other people being unhappy with his work. Let's see. The next subject is phone line. I asked that Brent contact our friend at Geodesic Structures and arrange for the daily briefing. This has been coming to me after attention, and it bears enough hidden agenda and missed reports to make up by any hotline a dozen times over. Please decide how to brief things down, and then we will not be pressed on a daily basis at this keyboard. I do want the reports just as have been coming, so please attend this also, for these are the subjects which need the observations of higher vision tattletales. Much information comes across the AP lines that you never hear about.
Yes, such as you're the one who ordered all this murder side in Texas, Reno. You know, your attorney general. You better get busy investigating that woman. She was also involved in a massive cover-up of a child pornography ring where children were badly, badly used.
Much information comes across the AP lines that you never hear about. Even the Doris E.J. Ecker E.T. stupidity made it onto the AP lines and was reported around the world. Yes, indeed, you have plenty of information, and ones who wish to toy with our team will answer for it the only way recognized, in a court of injustice. Things you have missed. At the early onset of the Waco, Texas massacre, or was it, I told you there would be found a connection directly to the Israeli Mossad. This was a bit too much for even my staunchest crew members, but let's just see what is coming out now. We give appreciation to the American Patriots Fax Network, Faxing for Freedom. Please get on that network, team. We will share with them whatever they like, and as soon as we come into funding, get them some of that too, please. Quoting.
We have it coming eventually. You know, any decade now, it will begin to appear. But at the moment, we have one in Manila, one in Taipei, and one in Switzerland. So things are happening. It just requires a little bit of electric prodding to get hung up on commissions and things. I don't need a lot of it. And then they can do with themselves whatever they want to. But it's going to happen eventually.
CAN stands for Cult Awareness Network. CAN is implicated in the Waco bloodbath by Harley Schlanger. Faxed April 19, 1993. Investigators have confirmed that the Cult Awareness Network and allied associations in Australia were responsible for setting up the bloody shootout in Waco, Texas, which resulted in the deaths of 4 federal agents and at least 4 members, my how quickly things change, of the Branch Davidian sect, whose compound was raided. The abortive raid was conducted by agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the BATF, who were acting on the basis of intelligence provided by so-called cult experts who have deprogrammed former members of the sect. These experts had convinced BATF officials that members of the Branch Davidian sect were preparing to follow their leader, David Koresh, in some imminent violent action, either a mass suicide, an attack on the citizens of Waco, or the assassination of a political figure. Intending to preempt such an event, BATF agents went to the compound on February the 28th to execute a sealed warrant which alleged violations of federal weapons laws. To deliver the warrant, BATF sent more than 100 armed officers backed by 3 helicopters to launch an all-out assault on the sect's compound. The deaths occurred during the 45-minute gun battle. from which BATF agents were forced to retreat. Post-raid cover-up. Though a BATF spokesman initially blamed the failure of the action on being outgunned, the evidence being compiled shows that it was inaccurate information provided by CIN and its affiliates that caused the bloodiest day in BATF history. BATF officials insist the raid would have been successful had the element of surprise been maintained. They are focusing efforts on discovering the source of a leak, someone who tipped off Koresh that a BATF raiding party was coming, as a scapegoat for the disaster. This explanation has come under attack from both anti-terrorist experts and law enforcement officials. Colonel Charles Bigwit, the founder of the U.S. Army's Delta Force Commando 2 unit, blamed poor intelligence for the raid, which he described as ludicrous and an embarrassment. Former McLennan County Waco District Attorney Vic Fiesel, who studied Koresh and sect members when he unsuccessfully prosecuted them in 1986, characterized the raid as a vulgar display of power. In contrast to the bloody fiasco 3 weeks ago, Koresh, then named Vernon Howell, and six others turned themselves in at the sheriff's request in 1986. "We treated them like human beings rather than stormtroopering the place," Fiesel told reporters. Fiesel reiterated what Beckwith and others have alleged, that it was the faulty intelligence which caused the disaster. "The Branch Davidians," he said, "are protective of what's theirs. They're protective of their land. They view their land as Muslims do Mecca, and Jews view Jerusalem. If they'd, the BATF, called and talked to them, the Davidians would have given them what they wanted." Comment from Cerise. "Now you are all forced to recognize the facts, and it is not pretty, Americans. It is not pretty anywhere in your world this day. When it came to the Holocaust involved, not to mention it took place while the Holocaust of Jews claim was being celebrated, and you, the taxpayers of America, paid for a museum which has taken a week to dedicate, in America yet, why not Israel, and on and on and on. If you miss the connections, you are blind as the salamander of Leander's cave. When the cute little terrorists pushed the tanks into place to place a little gas inside, they blocked every entrance and exit from the place, including the escape routes to the safety shelter areas. Accident? Come, come, Americans. Then they just sort of accidentally dumped a little CS gas inside, non-flammable, and a lot of CAP gas, which is more flammable and easier to detonate than napalm, as you recognize it in Vietnam. Just all in today's games, I suppose. Norma, look what I am writing. Please, we need to leave this so we are not late. We can pick up where we left off a bit later. Thank you."
Try this Australian connection. Right after that.
The Australian connection. The most bizarre input to BATF planners came from Australia, from Geoff Hossack, a private investigator hired by former members. Hossack traveled to the U.S. 3 times to, quote, build his case. After meeting with the representatives of various law enforcement agencies in Texas, who were not convinced by his report, he turned to the U.S. consulate in Melbourne. Consulate representative Sandra Stevens filed a report with the State Department after receiving a letter from Hossack, which warned that Howell was heading in one of the following directions.
That's Vernon Howell. That's Koresh.
A final Jonestown massacre, an armed confrontation with authorities, or some bizarre behavior such as an attempted assassination of a public figure. This report was passed on to BATF agents. The report had a significant effect on BATF officials as HOSAC's formulations became their official line on course after the tragedy in Waco. In justifying the tactics of the raid, BATF spokesman Jack Killeran said that the agency concluded that Koresh would either launch an attack on Waco residents or instigate a mass suicide. Another official, speaking of off the record, said the timing of the raid, quote, was a coin flip over whether they would attack the citizens of Waco or do a Jonestown. In interviews with Australian press, HOSAC went further.
Keeping in mind it was exactly like Jonestown, is exactly what happened in Jonestown. Those people, the majority of them, did not die by cyanide poisoning, they died by lead poisoning through the brain. Right down to the same thing that they did in Jonestown, where they piled bodies one on top of the other to make it impossible to count them. Absolutely, it's a Mossad trick.
In interviews with Australian press, HOSAC went further with his scare stories. He said there was a very real probability that a child would be sacrificed at the compound, possibly on Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement.
How wonderful. So we just sacrifice them all. You know. That's the sickest of all the reasons that they give you. Well, we heard they were abusing children in there. I assume the last day was not child abuse.
He told Channel 10 in Melbourne that police should dig up the grounds of the compound to discover a secret cemetery there. It is unlikely that HOSAC's charges were given credibility because they were believable, but due to his association with CAN networks in Australia, investigators have learned that HOSAC does jobs for the Arnold Block Liebler law firm, whose partner is Mark Lieber of the infamous Lieber family. He and his brother, ISI, I don't know how to say that.
ISA,
who is co-chairman with Edgar Bronfman of the World Jewish Congress, have long-standing ties with both the Mr.
Anybody ever heard Bronfman? Right.
With both the Mossad, Israeli intelligence, and the U.S. Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. A recent EIR three-part series on the Lieblers documented their role as part of the of Dope Inc. Ken works closely with the ADL, which has run a protection racket for organized crime in the U.S. since its foundings. Isa Liebler has been spreading the same slanders against U.S. political prisoner Lyndon LaRouche in Australia as have Ken and the ADL in the U.S. Any competent industry inquiry into the disastrous events of February the 28th must begin with a full investigation into the role of CAN and its affiliates, and steps must be taken to prevent these networks from shaping and directing the investigations of law enforcement agencies in the future.
Well, we just don't run out though, do we? There's one now called Ron's Apocalypse, and that's the brother of Bratz.
This is a document put out by John Prukop, chairman of the We the People Committee, Center for Action in the state of Washington.
Remember, we ran the paper where a vote asked petition to go in and bring these people out.
News release, April 21, 1993, titled Ranch Apocalypse. Sandy Valley, Nevada. former presidential candidate and Special Forces Commander Lieutenant Colonel James Boegreitz today chastised the FBI's blundered handling of the Waco, Texas federal siege, being dubbed by the establishment media as Ranch Apocalypse. Colonel Greitz detailed his remarks in a morning telephone call with his former National Press Secretary John R. Prukop of Washington State. Greitz explained that CS gas, which was pumped into the Branch Davidian complex for 5 hours during the early morning hours of day 51 of the federal siege, set the stage for a total inferno. While the American people were being told that CS gas is non-flammable and non-pyrotechnic, the FBI failed to tell the rest of the story. Colonel Greitz said the dispersant for CS gas is known in military assault circles as CAP, which is highly flammable. In fact, the CS gas itself is an incapacitant, debilitating an adult victim who breathes it within 45 seconds into disorientation and in some cases into unconsciousness.
And of course they said they were pumping in harmless gas. And already, even in the open press, it is noted that this, in confined quarters, even at its best, causes massive surface reaction, tremendous disability to the body, and of course, what he just said.
Wright said his special forces operatives within Southeast Asia were prohibited from using this type of gas because it is insufferable and very inhumane. Quote, "You can imagine the effects on children, given the fact a fully grown adult becomes totally incapacitated within about 45 seconds after inhaling it," Greitz added. He believes the actions by the FBI and those individuals from the military assisting them were dumb. Greitz adamantly stated, "The FBI is stupid." Colonel Greitz, having dealt with the BATF and FBI in Naples, Idaho during the federal siege on the Weaver family last August, of course has first-hand experience dealing with the bureaucracy. After many delays and the serving of a citizen's arrest warrant on the FBI agent in charge and the governor of Idaho, Greitz was finally allowed access and successfully brought the surviving members of the Weaver family and Kevin Harris off the mountain without further bloodshed. He said for the FBI to have carried out their plans yesterday in Waco, Texas is proof positive they intended for no one to come out alive. Greitz said that instead of United States Attorney General Janet Reno resigning, the people should demand she stand in a glass enclosure and be on the business end of receiving the same kind of CS gas as was administered to the members of the Branch Davidian Church while holding a lantern. This would dispel any rumors.
You thought I was bad. Great. That's my son.
This would dispel any rumors that the CS gas was safe to be used against the women and children at Waco.
Come to think of it, it's a dandy idea.
Due to the highly flammable nature of the dispersant for CS gas, Greitz said, it would have taken only a small spark from any source or one of the motorized Bradley tanks seen moving around the complex to instantly ignite the entire Branch Davidian Church complex into an unsurvivable inferno, which is what apparently occurred. However, Colonel Greitz also stated that he's not convinced there was an evil thought in the minds of the FBI agents in charge of the Waco siege. He blames the fiery end of the standoff on incompetence at the highest levels of the bureaucracy. Quote, With the enormous resources available to the FBI, you'd think they'd have thought of about all possible contingencies, like having firefighting equipment at the site and on standby, just in case something like a spark from a passing tank were to occur.
Didn't they tell you why they didn't have any? I mean, why would Bo pick on them?
But then the authorities had already turned off the water to the buildings and had been telling everyone how the children were suffering due to lack of proper sanitation. Everything the FBI did was just dumb, real dumb. There is no question in my mind that the FBI started the fire through their own negligence. Grant said for the FBI to even suggest that David Koresh and his followers were going to commit suicide is ridiculous and indicates their complete lack of knowledge of Bible readings and Christian theology. Grant was also critical of FBI statements that they left no stone unturned to ensure the safe release of all Branch Davidian church members, whom the FBI consistently labeled as members of a cult. Grant would like to know why his two-page letter of March the 30th, 1993, offering to peacefully negotiate with the Koresh, and church members went unanswered. The two-page letter was faxed to President Bill Clinton, Attorney General Janet Reno, FBI Director William Sessions, and BATF Director Stephen Higgins, in which Grites offered to travel at his own expense on immediate notice. The FBI also ignored offers of help from Branch Davidian next of kin family members to peacefully bring the 51-day federal siege to a close.
Well, we moved from Waco to Canada. You ones are so interested in your children and all these inoculations and things. Starting with the last paragraph. This comes from one of our beloved friends in Canada. They share through and with Wes Mann. There are several of them up there that do meet. They have some very prime virgin land that they're efforting to just do some, a little bit of survival stuff on. Nothing big, nothing, but I think we may have to help them turn it into something a lot larger. All of you who witness fire the next time, or whatever that was, early, I believe began last Sunday on your television, a little mini-series. Well, the situation, of course, is to brainwash a little bit further because they're utilizing the subject of global warming and how everybody is dying, but they really get it across to you for what's coming. And this was an American family finally having to make it across the border to survive by going to Canada. At least in this part of Canada, this would be the far western edge near the Namib River and etc. And I, what is that, British Vancouver?
Yes, sir.
British Columbia.
Excuse me, Commander. Let me just give a new take.